Sir, that'll shut down the entire planet.
I told you, you'd better hope I didn't make it back.
You push that button. Everything we've accomplished for the past 500 years will be finished. Our technology, our way of life, our entire history. We'll have to start all over again. For God's sakes, don't do it, Snake!
The name's Plissken.
Hello, I'm Katie, and welcome to RetroMade, your pop culture rewind. Today, we continue the double crossover with Jim and Kevin from the Pool Scene podcast with the sequel to Escape from New York, 1996's Escape from LA, and we'll also be sure to touch on all the other happenings of the time in the time capsule. Kevin, Jim, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey now, thank you, Katie.
So what's the story with Pool Scene Podcast? Let us know.
Well, we just released High Fidelity this week. We closed out Music Month. That was episode 193. So we are now seven away from 200. June, will we be celebrating our four-year anniversary of our podcast.
We started as a movie and music video podcast.
That was
and
it.
And then it's become pop culture. It's
nostalgia
mostly. It's crime. In addition to weekly episodes on Mondays talking about movies, we occasionally drop in some of other episodes within. We have the swim short series.
Yeah, our 15-minute breaks. And then we have the swim meet series, which is kind of our documentaries or long form. And then we have pool crimes or pool crimes thing, where it's not just about crimes that happen in pools. It's just about guys doing bad. I figure it's an easy way to just brand things, call it pool crimes. So,
but if you listen regularly, you get in on the inside jokes pretty quickly and kind of figure out the format. You know,
we are open books. We hold nothing back.
That's true.
At all.
Unfortunately for us. Maybe to our detriment.
It's great. If you like RetroMade, you'll probably like their show as well. So check it out, guys. So let's open the time capsule from August of 1996. So this
movie, yes. 1996, this movie to me doesn't feel 96. Like looking back, I'm like,
what does it feel
if
like?
If I had to place this, maybe 2001, maybe.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, now that you say that, I can see that definitely. A little bit. But it was August of 1996, so that would have been like the 95 to 96 TV season. And so we've already covered that a little bit, so I thought we might do something a little bit different in terms of what the top shows were. I'll list those, and then if you guys want to pick one and share a tidbit or a memory or whatever you would like about it, the top shows, we have ER, Seinfeld, Friends, Caroline in the City, The Single Guy, Home Improvement, Boston Common. This was actually its premiere season. NYPD Blue, Frasier, and Grace Under Fire.
Now, I will say right off the bat, now I know Kevin's going to bring it up, so I'm going to say ER for me was a huge deal just because Goose was on it, Anthony Edwards. And I felt like he was never vindicated
George Clooney,
not the best Batman. But when it came to Anthony Edwards, I always thought that Maverick killed him in Top Gun because of his hot dogging and bad piloting. So it felt great to know that he got his, you know, he got his flowers on ER. But man, the spoilers, when Dr. Green dies in season 8, I think, I still cry like a baby. I have no problem admitting it. It's one of the hardest tear jerking episodes I've ever seen in my life.
Did you watch all of ER?
I watched all 15 seasons.
15 seasons.
At least they knew when to end it.
Did you ever watch Grey's Anatomy?
No.
But why?
I'm
Okay.
Yeah, I just couldn't do it.
So the one that jumps out to me when, you know, you shared this list with us, NYPD Blue, Dennis Franz's ass, is the big monumental moment because how, why Dennis Franz?
People tuned in for the booty.
Yeah, it's like, oh, Jim and I, before we started recording, were saying this show would almost pre-advertise that they were going to say a certain curse word.
Yeah, they're going to swear.
So it's like, oh, I'm tuning in to NYPD.
They're going to say SOB? What? Yeah.
And then,
no.
But of all people, Dennis Franz, they're like, hey, Denny, we're going
to. Hey, Dent. Yeah, that common man booty.
We're going to show your butt this week.
All right.
Yeah, I do recall his butt being shown being a huge deal. That's for certain. Yep. Okay, NYPD Blue and ER, huh?
Oh, big time. Well, and obviously Seinfeld, by far. I mean, it's Larry David in his glory. And I know a couple times on this podcast, I've even referenced the fact of, I don't think the single guy ever got enough credit because Jonathan Silverman and Joey Slotnick as a duo were just like Tom Hanks and Peter Scolari, in my opinion.
I have almost no recollection at all of the single guy.
Same.
This is how bad it is. I know that I'm pretty sure, and fact check me if I'm wrong, and I might be. This was, I think, either a Tuesday or Thursday 8:30 slot. So it came in after Friends before Seinfeld, I think. So it was a good leading, good buffer between two.
Oh, I'm shocked it got that good of a slot.
It was really good. I only think it lasted 4 or 5 seasons, but I don't think it got enough credit for how good it was.
Hmm.
I do not care for Friends at all. It's well documented. It's just not for me.
Hates it. Like Billy Joel, you hate it.
That's hilarious. It's kind of those, it's definitely my favorite. It is a comfort food for me. I'm a Friends person, indeed. My sisters and I will quote it. And, you know, a lot of people either do or don't know what we're talking about.
I will say also, though, and this is a hot take or controversial opinion, I'm not really that big of a fan of just sitcoms in general.
Yeah, you're not really a big
sitcom
dude.
I'm not a sitcom person. I mean, I don't know what it is. Like stuff like, especially modern sitcoms, I'm not even convinced how much I dislike them. But I certainly watch my fair share of TGI Fridays.
Oh, yeah.
With, you know, Family Matters and Home Improvement.
Full House,
all of those. Definitely spent, you know, time doing that. When I wasn't out, because I was such a cool guy at that age.
Yeah, you're super cool.
I wasn't home on Fridays, too.
Oh.
Appointment view, because I had so many dates and stuff.
Now, Katie, do you happen to remember, because we even looked it up, do you remember Boston Common at all?
Vaguely.
Yeah, because I was like, what the heck is Boston Common?
Was that
I looked it up because I was like, I don't remember that. 2 seasons, not at all anything near what I thought it was about.
Yeah.
Then there was also, maybe I'm confusing it with a show that came later about a public school in Boston with Shy McBride.
Boston Public?
That was Boston Public. Different show. Okay. Different
I don't know why, but I confused this show with the William Shatner lawyer show. Because didn't it have to do with something about Boston Legal, I think?
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
Figured out.
We're due for one of those. The Boston Common, well, Boston Public, Boston Chicago. Legal.
NBC relies on, I think they're Wednesday nights or something. It's on all Chicago night. It's Chicago Med, Chicago PD, Chicago Fire.
Why?
They love Chicago.
They do crossovers that way. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
We already covered some of the premieres in the breakdown episode, listeners, that you hopefully already heard. If you haven't listened to the breakdown episode, Kurt Russell. But some finales for 96. The Phil Donahue Show. I don't recall it going that long, like all the way to 96. Picket Fences. I feel like this was a show for like moms or 30-somethings.
I feel like this show had Alan Scarrett in it, but I might be, I'm digging deep, and that might be because of the bike accident I had back in 08, but I feel like Alan Scarrett was a part of the show.
Tom Scarrett.
Yeah. See, I was like, lost it.
Alan Thick.
Yeah.
Lost
Tom
it.
Scarrett. Tom Scarrett. You might be right.
Yeah.
Murder, She Wrote. This was its final, and it ran from 84 to 96. It had a really long, long run.
I wrote an episode of Murder, She Wrote. We did virtual reality.
The virtual reality episode. My girlfriend and I started from season one. We're up to season four.
I like to operate under the theory that Jessica was the angel of death.
And she knows everybody.
Because
it's a little town.
It's a little town. And Jessica kind of happens to find.
I love the beginning of every new episode. She has a nephew. She'll have a long lost friend, old boyfriend. Mm-hmm. They somehow, wherever they go, here comes Jessica. Lock the doors. Don't acknowledge her. You're safe. Let her be.
I can remember like Murder, She Wrote coming on at like my grandma's house or something back when there were X channels and being like, Murder, She Wrote. I would watch Murder, She Wrote.
I'd rather watch that than Matlock.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
No offense to Andy Griffith, but sorry.
It's aged very well.
It's relevant still.
I like it. It's on one of those channels, the rerun channels. It's on one of them.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember the commish?
Oh, Chiklis. Heck yeah.
Was it? Okay. I have heard the name, but I've never seen it. Don't know what it's about. A police commissioner, I know of it.
I know of it. I never watched an episode of it. I'm probably wrong. Probably police. I would say a police commissioner. He's got to be a commissioner or something, not a Parks and Rec. But
I would hope he's commissioner or something.
Oh, no. Well, it also ended in 96. So that's TV for you. Music billboards. These are good. The ones that I do in the 90s, or especially like in the mid to late 90s, have been pretty good because that was like our era, it seems.
Yeah. High school.
Not quite middle school,
whatever, you child,
you youngin.
It
billboards for the week of August 9th, 1996, number one song, Macarena. Los Del Rio. I don't know if anybody recalls the name of the group. I didn't.
I remember when that hit 96. I was a freshman in the high school. And I could just remember just the dance craze.
So you know what I always thought of with Macarena was so weird is we used to have teen dances at this place. And I remember when Macarena came out, I was like, I know that dance because at the teen dances, everyone used to do that same dance to Depeche Mode's Personal Jesus.
And it worked out. It worked out perfect.
Oh, and I was like,
we didn't
Macarena's
do that.
Ripping off that dance.
Yeah.
And
it's the same dance.
It was the same. I mean, yeah.
Same beat.
Same thing, but all the cross arms behind the head, hips turn. So that dance, I think, predated the song. But with something like the Macarena, that's so fascinating. And we're later this year, we're going to do definitive songs of the 2000s.
Was Macarena on our definitive 90s list?
I can't remember. I think we mentioned it.
Yeah, I don't think we made it on our top 30.
Songs like that are everywhere.
Yeah.
Commercials, radio, everywhere. But who's actually purchasing them? You know, who's like, I got to go to the mall and buy the CD single of the Macarena.
Or the Cupid Shuffle.
Yeah, or the Cupid Shuffle.
Well,
or
I suppose
you name
no
it.
One, but somebody has to pay the rights every time it's on a commercial or it's used in something. That's maybe how they make money. I don't know. Good call.
I don't think I've ever seen a Macarena CD.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
I bought the whole album.
It was on Columbia House or what was the other? Where, you know, one of those. Yep.
You got it as a free add-on because you sure as hell didn't order it. Because could you name another song by Los Del Rio?
No.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they made their money, so good on them.
Indeed. The number two song is You're Making Me High by Toni Braxton.
This music video was a revelation for me as a 15-year-old kid. We talked about Adrian Barbeau in part one in Escape to New York. But watching this video as a kid, I was like, oh, Bella.
You are making me high.
Yes, you are. Baby.
Yes, she was pretty. Now, the number three song I'm super jazzed about because I don't think this artist has made the show
yet.
My favorite of all time, one Mr. Tupac Shakur How Do You Want It?
Your body is banging, baby. I love it when you're flown it. Time to give it to daddy, Nick. And now tell me how you want it.
Featuring Casey and JoJo.
They go off in that song.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
All the runs and stuff that they do. What a great song. My mom loves that.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, my mom's awesome. A huge fan. Yeah.
And then my mom loved Nelly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So weird.
Wow. You guys have cool moms.
Wait, yeah. I don't know. I will always remember my mom. She'll be like, did you hear? And this right when I graduated from high school, she was like, you know, that new, I think his name's Nelly. He's got that, the boom, boom song with the rims. I'm like, the boom, boom song with the rims, mom. And I put it on. She's like, oh, Country Grammar. I love this song. I'm like, mom, if you listen to the unedited version of this song, good grief.
Thinking about Nelly and how like all his songs were about like stuff. Yeah. Like grills, mm-hmm. and then he had the song about the Air Force Ones. Mm-hmm. It's just, I'm going to write a bunch of songs about just stuff.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be a lot of substance to it.
Just stuff.
But it works. You put it to a great beat. And
I love Nelly. Oh. So How Do You Want It was the number three song. Number four, I don't recall these being in the same time period. Twisted by Keith Sweat. Yeah. I mean, that was like the song of the year, I feel like.
Oh, that was some slow jams.
Yeah, 95, like basically 92 through 98 R&B.
Was
fantastic.
That was
Keith Sweat, and then he did the super group LSG.
Oh, LaVert Sweat and Gill.
Yeah, LaVert Sweat and Gill.
Baby.
Yeah, that whole album, that Keith Sweat album was fantastic. We actually we made Twisted into a drinking game. Every time.
Really?
Twisted. Like he says Twisted so often in the song. Like every time he says Twisted, you have to take a drink. So,
You got pretty twisted.
We did.
That's right.
A little different.
I'm sure a lot of the songs was featured at those teen dances we were at.
Yeah. Because... And most of the time we wouldn't understand what any of it meant.
No, we didn't know what they were talking about.
What is he talking about? All right.
I got to go huff the dry ice.
Anybody got any whippets?
Yeah.
Tracy Chapman has the number five song with Give Me One Reason.
Nice.
Very
nice. I'm glad to see she finally got her flowers with Fast Car. Yeah. Thank God. I mean, that's always a great song, but then when it was at the Grammys, I'm glad to see younger generations now know who Tracy Chapman is, and I'm happy as hell for her.
Yeah, that version, her version is, I mean, it's a song in its own category.
Oh, yeah.
Eric Clapton, Change the World, is number six.
Oh,
is that from Phenomenon? Lesser known, I feel.
Or
like.
No.
Might have been
from Phenomenon. John Travolta, shout out.
Oh, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Some more 90s R&B with R. Kelly. I Can't Sleep, Baby, is number seven.
Oh, man, I don't remember that.
Yeah, you will know it. It's not one of his like super well-known ones, but you'll know it. He can't do anything without her. He can't sleep. He can't eat. He can't do any of the things.
And I just, you do know it.
Definitely a song played at dances, and it's so repetitive. I can't stand it if I hear it. Come on, ride it. The Train by Quad City DJs.
Come on, ride the train and ride it.
They had pretty much all of their songs were like, we need one line.
Yeah.
Then we repeat incessantly. They did the Space Jam soundtrack for the Michael Jordan Space Jam. And it was like, come on and slam if you want to jam over and over and over again.
Yeah. Could you imagine that meeting they had? But listen, Kylie Minogue knew what she was doing with the locomotion. We need a new locomotion. Then involve the train. Yes.
It wasn't just Quad City DJs. It was 69 Boys. Yep. It was like there were a bunch of these that were built around a dance, like the Butterfly.
Oh yeah.
And it was just stuff that is gonna hopefully latch on and get played at weddings.
And it's a double entendre.
Yeah.
So
you had Freak Nasty, the Dip.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Who Let the Dogs Out, similar
As Cleveland Browns fans, we know that song all too well.
Oh, do they play that at games?
Oh, no. God. It's like the song with the dog pound and everything.
We have a minor league baseball team here in town that are called the Scrappers, which are dogs.
And yeah. And I used to have to play that up in the booth all the time.
At every single game.
Oh, yeah. After a while, I'm like, can we find a new song that involves a dog?
Would you rather be an artist who has three or four top 20, top 30 type hits? You hung around for a year or two, maybe an album or two. Or would you rather have one massive one-hit wonder? And this is probably a pretty easy answer.
Yeah, what do you think, Katie?
I would rather be around for a couple years, have a handful of good songs, be known for more than just the one song.
I see. It depends what your goals are, because if you're a true artist and at least you can say in that instance with, I want to hang around for a few years, put stuff out that I really enjoy, or you can do Who Let the Dogs Out.
Yeah.
And then you're making money for maybe the next 50 years.
It's true.
Because your song's getting licensed.
I always feel like it would be an uphill battle because you'd be trying to convince other people, I can do other things. Yeah. Like, no,
you want the dog we song. Want the dogs to get let
Arf
out.
Your ass up to the stage and let them out.
Well,
all right?
It's sort of like the fascinating The Smash Mouth story. Mm. Because when they wrote, I think it was Walking on the Sun.
Yeah, I think
it was the song. The guitar player told the singer, he was like, look, if we release this song, it's over. This is what we've become.
That's
he's like, this is going to be a massive hit, but this does not represent who we've been previously. And then it's a really fascinating story because sure enough, they released the song. They were exactly right.
I rushed out to National Record Mart and bought the CD. I was that guy. I was the Smash Mouth guy.
Yeah, I got sick of that song. And then I was super annoyed by that guy and his voice, and I didn't want to hear anything else from him.
Yeah.
Well, Alanis Morissette, remember how big she was around this time?
Oh, yeah.
You Learn / You Ought to Know.
I loved her vocal range. Oh, her vocal range was amazing.
You Ought to Know about
Uncle Joey.
Uncle Joey, Dave Coulier.
I just recently read something that she claims it wasn't him, and that there was like an article about it was like, could have been like four different people, but I'm pretty sure it was him.
That picture's been floating around recently of them together, and it kind of makes me feel a little scummy because she's so young. She looks very like teenager, and he's
Uncle Joey.
Yeah. I think he's in his like 30s and she's 18.
Yeah.
It's cut it out, Uncle Joey.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, that's the deal with young girl. They don't know better. You know what I mean? So,
well, she did know something about, she had six singles on that album.
Oh.
So I remember that just being like, when's it going to stop? Like, I liked it, but I was like, when's it going to stop? She has six singles off Jagged Little Pill.
What an album. Great.
It was.
And then number 10 is LL Cool J's Loungin' is the technical name of the song, but it's Who Do You Love?
Go ahead, Daddy.
It's a Queens thing, baby.
I'm gonna lounge with you.
Rock on.
The remix version of this song is incredible. Remember, LL Cool J went away. Like, he fell off the face of the planet after Mama said, knock you out. Then he comes back with Mr. Smith. With Boyz II Men doing Hey Lover.
That's what I was hoping you were going to say. Hey Lover.
Hey Lover. And then this came out, which I like a little bit more because it has a great beat
to
it.
And he did the song off the Beavis and Butthead Do America soundtrack.
That's right.
And Beavis and Butthead are in the music videos.
Yeah.
Well, I can't remember the name of the album, but one of his albums is every single song is like a hit.
Yeah.
And it would have been probably around this time. Yeah.
And then this was around when he really parlayed it all into an acting career.
Deep Blue Sea.
I see. My hat
is like a shark's fin.
You guys said that simultaneously. Did you see him in I Loved In Too Deep? Because it also has Omar Epps in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen In Too Deep.
I've seen all of those movies.
Yeah.
Omar Epps stuff. Yeah.
It was good. LL. Yeah. So I'm in concert too.
Oh. When did you see him in concert?
Probably 15 years ago.
Okay.
10 years ago, 15 years ago, at an outdoor venue.
It was primarily him. He was the headlining artist. And then was there anyone else with him?
Yeah, there probably was. It might have been like Public Enemy,
okay.
Ooh, De La Soul. There was like a few. And then LL was the headliner.
Mm-hmm. That would have been a great concert.
It's kind of sad. I mean, last summer, we have an outdoor amphitheater here that Nelly played last year. But unfortunately, I mean, I guess fortunately for consumer, but these artists can't sustain just like a gig by themselves with an unknown opener. It's all part of some like 90s or 2000 revival tour. And now they just like slam a bunch of these artists all on the same bill. and I have not went to any of them, but it's like TLC, Silk, and like all these other artists.
The problem is concert tickets are so damn expensive, and it's, you got to justify going to see, because we're from the Youngstown, Ohio area, and I got to justify the fact that I'm paying $150 to be in an outdoor amphitheater in downtown Youngstown underneath a bridge, which isn't the greatest place. Yeah. All right. No offense, but let's be honest.
Last year, remember, we saw Gin Blossoms at a Rib Burn-Off,
which was awesome. Was
fantastic.
They sound amazing.
And it was like $10.
Yeah.
But we got cooked.
Yeah.
We got absolute cooked.
There was no shade. Sun protect, no shade. Because we had their biggest regret. Like growing up around here, we would have Rib Burn-Offs like constantly at the mall. And Gin Blossoms would play every single year. And none of us ever went. So we said, if we ever have the opportunity to see the Gin Blossoms, we're going to go. And we ended up going up
in
Cleveland.
They toured with Toad the Wet Sprocket because, again, can't do just like your own thing. So they toured
Bare Naked Ladies.
Yeah, Bare Naked Ladies, Toad the Wet Sprocket, Gin Blossoms. And we went to, it's like an outdoor theater that's on
Lake Erie.
Oh, nice.
Watson.
Yeah, Nautica.
And we had a great time. And then Gin Blossoms are coming to the Rib Burn-Off,
which is literally 15 minutes away.
It felt more appropriate to finally close the loop because we always wanted to see him at the Rib Burn-Off.
And we saw him at a Rib Burn-Off.
What is a Rib Burn-Off?
So it's just like a festival, except for instead of having rides and games, it's literally just food.
It's literally just barbecue.
It's a bunch of vendors that are selling ribs and stuff. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
They have a concert, and usually when we have Rib Burn-Offs, like there's 5 nights of it, and every night someone. Oh. When I was, 20, I saw Charlie Daniels Band, who played all Lynyrd Skynyrd songs.
Okay, so they just basically covered.
Yes, it was all Lynyrd Skynyrd.
So Charlie Daniels being a tribute band to Lynyrd Skynyrd.
And then any guess what the main event of Charlie Daniels was?
Freebird.
It was Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I'm pretty sure the encore was Freebird.
I actually
saw Lynyrd Skynyrd at an outdoor amphitheater, and they were with a few other people. I forget who. But it's like the younger brother. One of the guys' younger brother is the lead singer now, because most of them died, I think. But concerts. It's a different game now.
It's not worth it. It's just not worth it. You get older, you're like, God, I got to deal with the traffic going into the city, then out of the city. What time am I getting home? I got to work the next day.
If it is a concert, like Taylor Swift, for example, something like that, you compete with bots to purchase the tickets or you have to buy them on the resale market. It is just nightmare stuff. If you're a Swiftie and you're a huge fan, unfortunately, they don't make it easy for you to just get tickets. Like we talked about, do you remember, where you grew up, going to a physical Ticketmaster location and being there at open to purchase your ticket, they'd get out the laminated map and you'd point where you wanted to sit.
Oh, that was the best. And you actually got a ticket.
And they gave you a physical
ticket.
Yeah.
That you had to hold for.
The ones I went to back in the day were for like festivals. So there wasn't a seat, or it was just all general admission. So like I never picked a seat, but they were like $20.
Yeah.
I feel
they were awesome.
Yeah.
$28.75.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to news and events with MTV2. Their second TV channel launched in August 96.
Their answer to, MTV, it used to be 24/7. We'll make another channel and make that 24/7. And then shortly thereafter, we can throw the real world reruns and Road Rules reruns onto this one instead. God, man. I thought, being a teenager and MTV2's coming out, you're like, all right, finally, 24/7 music videos again. No.
It
wrecked it again.
Although MTV2 was very good to play the obscure stuff.
The back catalogs.
Yeah, like alternative and rap and different things that weren't necessarily featured on MTV. And I think that was the selling point.
Yeah.
We used to love The Box.
Oh, are you familiar with the Box Network, Katie?
What? No, look, there's a network called The Box.
It was very short lived.
It was about late 90s. Cause I can remember watching this in seventh period psychology class. Yeah. If we were good, the teacher was like, you can watch the last 20 minutes of The Box. So basically it was based out of Canada. I think Much Music owned it. It was a video jukebox. So they'd play videos, and if you, it was like 99.
The whole time the video is on, there's numbers scrolling across the bottom of the screen.
A crawl.
You would call the number.
What?
The 800 number. You would type in the 3-digit code of the video you wanted to watch, and then it would go into the queue.
Yeah.
I cannot believe I've never heard of this. It sounds pretty awesome.
Every once in a while, you can find a music video.
Evan and Jaren, if you ever look, go look at Evan and Jaren, Crazy for This Girl. Somebody uploaded it to YouTube. The actual, they took it, they ripped it off the box. But it also mixes in the Dawson's Creek. The Dawson's Creek footage, because it was featured on Dawson's Creek, another one of my guilt pleasure
shows. I do have some legitimacy concerns with the box because of, okay, what if you called in and you typed in 154 for Cottonmouth King's Bump?
Yeah.
And then I called and I wanted 154 Cottonmouth King's Bump.
Yeah.
They wouldn't play them back to back.
No.
So.
But you would get those obscure, like, mid-90s Euro dance.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Eiffel 65 was the first time I ever saw Blue was on the box. Then you would have B.O.N. with Boys. You only saw it on the box.
You love that song.
I love that song. That song's so bad. It's amazing.
Which song?
It's a band called B.O.N., and the name of the song's called Boys.
They're German, right?
They're German, yeah. Okay. There's a German version and an English version. The English version is so bad, it's good, because the translation is not stellar.
Like 99 Red Balloons? Isn't that original German?
Goldfinger's remake of 99 Red Balloons is probably one of the best covers of all time.
I love the English version of 99 Red Balloons when she says, in a hoey. That's how she says it. It's like, instead of in a hurry, it's in a hoey.
And her broken German English accent.
I love it so much.
Also, back in the day, you guys, Netscape Browser 3.0 is released 1996. Remember Netscape? I had forgotten about it.
I used to love the loading N in the corner where it would have the stars flying by the N. So you would just load brand. Oh, granted, back then, it's dial-up, so it's going to take 20 minutes where you see this end loading.
I did not own a personal computer until 2002.
Okay.
Or a laptop or nothing. Just never had a computer.
We were multimedia class in high school.
Yeah, all my friends had. And they definitely used Netscape.
Labs. The computer lab. Or friend's house. We didn't have one in 96 either.
I still have my Commodore 64 from 1984, and I still have it to this day. But it's definitely, I could not play Netscape or use Netscape Navigator.
That is so funny that you say that, because my parents, I made them keep it when they moved. They still have it. Our Commodore 64 that we had when we were kids too.
I love that thing.
Commodore's great.
Yeah.
Well,
just load up a game.
Yeah.
Go make dinner. Go take a shower. And then when you're done, MTV's remote control is ready to be played.
Or yes, classic. We had that game. Yes.
It's such a great, that's an underrated TV show.
Agreed.
That people need to understand how great it is. Ken Ober.
They had
Kari Wurr, Adam Sandler.
Commodore just had games for absolutely everything.
Yeah. And it was the joystick. The joystick.
Yep. One button. Played.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Memories. We should do a Commodore podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should.
Yeah.
Okay, so the movie that we're going to be talking about, Escape from LA, was the number 6 movie released in August of 96, but there were some other ones. A Time to Kill.
I saw that in theaters. Mm-hmm.
All right.
There's some big ones. Independence Day.
Yep.
Wasn't that the summer movie?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome Jack? Which I can't recall what Jack is. What's Jack?
Robin Williams.
It's Robin Williams playing an adult child.
Yeah. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Weird movie.
Yeah. Tin Cup.
Yeah, oh, we covered that. It. We love that
Costner
movie.
Golf movie.
Oh, so good. Rene Russo, Cheech Marin.
Romantic comedy. Same guy that did White Men Can't Jump.
Yeah. Another he did a bunch of sports movies, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's awesome.
Matilda.
Yep.
Courage Under Fire.
Meg Ryan. Yeah.
Is Denzel Washington in that, or am I thinking of something else?
I think so. I wanted to say Courage Under Fire. It had to do with helicopters and stuff like that. And Meg Ryan, Denzel. I think you're right, Katie.
I could be wrong. Phenomenon. Didn't you guys bring?
There we go.
Yeah. Phenomenon.
Travolta.
Yeah.
That's when Travolta post Pulp Fiction was like, yes. Give me everything. I want it all.
And he did. Phenomenon.
He's
face
like,
off. Face off. I'm doing it all. Broken Arrow. He's waterfalls.
They're all the same movie, sort of.
Yeah.
Chain Reaction, which I can't recall what that is. And then Kingpin, rounding out the top 10.
Chain Reaction is, it's Keanu Reeves, Morgan Freeman. Yep. They try to solve or create nuclear fusion. Mm-hmm. It's a very underrated movie. I would recommend that. If you can find it, I'm pretty sure it's available at places.
Sure. The DVD cover looks really cheap.
It's bad. It looks like you were in Walmart and you're like, oh, I'm going to buy that movie.
It looks like when they try to cash in on like an actor who's has like a sudden, and it's, they re-release one of their old movies.
Yeah.
That's like what it looks like.
Yeah.
And then King and Farrelly Brothers.
Oh, so
awesome. Also has Goldfinger.
Yes, that's right.
Is that Woody Harrelson? Who's in? Yeah, okay.
Roy Munson, Randy Quaid's in that.
Yeah. I like Woody.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So good.
Okay, before we get going on our movie talk, I have a couple questions for you guys.
All righty.
About our Everyman on Retromade. This season is the ultimate Everyman, both Patrick Swayze and Kurt Russell. Do you guys have any fandom thoughts? Anything that you would like to share about either of them?
So Patrick Swayze, my ex-girlfriend was a dance teacher.
Mm.
And the studio she taught at, that woman who owned it, Kathy Meggert, she danced with Patrick Swayze.
What?
And awesome. So used to give like anecdotes about young Patrick Swayze and basically how he had wished to be a womanizer, but they weren't really all that interested at that age in Patrick Swayze. But yeah, I love Swayze. I love
awesome.
The versatility of Dirty Dancing and leaning into his past as a dancer, but then doing Roadhouse and Point Break. I mean, as Bodie,
and
the coolest.
He can sing.
And he can
sing.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, better than me for certain.
It's a great drunk song to sing at your best friend's wedding out on the dance floor.
Yeah.
Oh,
I sang it.
Oh.
He sang it at his. It was like, wasn't your first dance, but it was one of
them. No, it wasn't my first
like
dance.
No.
I was very, very drunk.
Don't listen to the Usher cover of She's Like the Wind.
No. I don't know. But Kurt Russell, for me, like I mentioned it in Escape from New York, I grew up with Kurt Russell in the Disney movies where, you know, he was playing Dexter Riley and the computer wore tennis shoes. I love that. And I remember a kid renting Overboard from First Row Video. And then you watch Overboard now, you're like, whoa, you could not get it. This guy literally duped a woman into becoming his wife and lying and say she has kids. You pull that stuff up nowadays, you're serving 15 to 20.
But it's so good.
Great. Like that Overboard theme song. Mm-hmm. When me and my girlfriend watch that, she goes into this full spasm when that song comes on. Like she'll start kicking on the floor.
Why?
Because she gets all
so
hyper.
Happy.
It's like her hyper song.
Yeah.
It's her happy
song. Yeah.
Like She's Like the Wind is my happy song. Her happy song is the theme song to Overboard and Cash's theme from Tango and Cash.
Oh, good choices.
Which is a weird song. That song makes no sense at all in that movie.
Kurt Russell, he's just has this whole other like X factor layer of cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And in Death Proof, Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof, he plays Stuntman Mike. And he's just like the coolest dude. Well, for most of the time, spoiler free for Jim, who hasn't seen that.
No, I haven't.
But he just exudes this something that Kurt Russell has in every movie he's in.
And he's in the Fast and Furious franchise.
Yeah.
He's Mr. Nobody.
Yep.
So it makes it even better, except Fast X really sucked.
I haven't seen those. I kind of refuse to watch them. But yeah, I hear Kurt's in them.
Yeah. Last three. I mean, he's not like a feature in it. Like he's a secondary character.
Here and there.
Yeah.
I've seen the first three Fast and Furious. Not the latter 18 or however many there are.
Gotta watch 5.
Yeah, 5 is the best one where it's the perfectly rounded story. It's great action. Great, probably one of the best action movies. 5
is incredible. 5 is like a really great movie.
Then Law of Diminishing Returns, of course.
Yeah.
Okay, Fast 5. Maybe I will give it a whirl.
Starring The Rock.
Yeah, he's not a draw for me. So that's,
He's everywhere.
He is everywhere.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that Patrick Swayze and Kurt Russell look alike at all?
I can get it
If they played brothers in a movie, I would buy it.
87 to 89.
Yeah.
If they did a movie together, you'd be like, okay, I can see them playing brothers. Definitely.
But independently, I probably would not link them.
No. There are certain roles I could see them being interchangeable with, though. Like, I could see Kurt Russell switching with Swayze in Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
I could see Kurt Russell be in that role as Sam Wheat. One word.
Sam Wheat.
Sam Wheat.
Okay. All right. So you can see him as brothers, but independently, not so much.
Not so much.
Me. Okay.
Still handsome as hell.
Yeah.
You know.
Shall we get into the movie Escape from LA?
Let's do it.
Now, you guys, for listeners, you should watch the YouTube version because Jim and Kevin have a super cool room that they podcast in with all of their fun things. And you can see it on display, including the cover for Escape from LA and a board game for Escape from New York.
Yes. Never knew there was a board game for it.
It was a gift.
Yeah. No idea. I haven't played it.
Oh, yeah.
No, I have not. My girlfriend found it in an antique store for $10. And it could be one of these things we end up playing, but it's literally a map of Liberty, Manhattan Island. Mm. You're just trying to literally
get out.
All right.
I like it. That's fun. And is that the Rock'em Sock'em? What's the ring?
But here?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
These are WWF Hasbro characters. Kevin and I love wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin gifted me, this is his WWF Hasbro ring. So he gifted me this. And then I just started finding Hasbro wrestlers because I have a toy room upstairs and I collect wrestling figures. So whenever I can find them on the cheap, like at thrift stores or something like that, because some of these figures now go for insane money. Yeah. If I can find them on the cheap, we throw them in the ring. Like this whole studio down here.
If you got the full tour, there's just a little bit of everything down here. Like we're big collectors of the McDonald's merchandise from retro McDonald's merchandise. There's a lot of that. There's
amusement park stuff, turtles, movies. Armageddon is heavily featured in the studio down here because that was our first episode was Armageddon's.
Very cool room. I'm very jealous of all of the memorabilia. August 9th, 1996, this movie, as I mentioned, was the sequel, but 15 years later to the 1981 version, rated R, hour and 41 minutes. Now, I thought this was interesting. So the original movie, Escape from New York, its IMDb rating was a 7.1. It's only a 5.7 for LA.
Fair.
I think it's fair. I think it would have been different if there would only have been maybe a 5-year gap between the movies. This is 15 years later.
New York also is minimal on like the comedy and
it's gritty.
Kind of gritty.
It's
more
dirty.
Like the Warriors or something. And then LA is, we're going to turn the camp up to 15.
Hey, you guys seen that ESPN Extreme Games? How much stuff can we throw into this movie? Hang gliding, surfing, you name it, basketball.
I kind of liked the campiness of it. And
it's great.
Yeah. And because there were so many callbacks to the original and it followed the exact same formula, it was somehow comforting to me. I very much liked it, but I don't think other viewers did because they spent $50 million on it, 10 of which went to Kurt Russell's salary. Did you guys know that? Yeah.
I did not know that.
And then it only grossed $42 million, so it didn't make its money back. But I think it's similar, like a lot of John Carpenter movies. It becomes like a cult favorite later.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the same here.
It's niche. And then reading about this, that they wanted to do the third movie, Escape from Earth. I'm just like, how the hell is he going to escape from? There's no electricity now. Spoiler alert, but still.
Because of how it ended, it was kind of set up for a third movie. But then they're like, oh, this one tanked. So we're not doing that now. But so you guys, if you haven't seen Escape from New York or, if you haven't seen that movie, watch it and then watch Escape from L.A. But the year is 2013 and Snake Plissken is once again called in by the United States government to recover a potential doomsday device from Los Angeles, now an autonomous island where undesirables are deported.
Well, so the president predicts that there will be an earthquake.
The president is Nostradamus.
Yes, he's a presidential candidate who predicts that there will be an earthquake that will break LA off the into the one. Ocean, which then happens, which then secures him the presidency.
Lifetime.
And then they make him the president for life.
Makes him president for life.
And oh, so LA,
it's
a full island now.
And you get sent there for moral offenses. Like it's a theocracy now. The United States is now a theocracy. So if you're an atheist, you get deported. If you're the wrong religion, like if you're not Christian, you get deported. If you drink, you smoke, you have sex before marriage. There's all these things you can't.
You get your choice.
So
you arrive at LA and then it's either you lose your citizenship to the United States and you can proceed into Los Angeles or electrocuted to death.
Yeah. Great options.
Which is just right out in the open.
Like Jesus.
It is. The first one had that too. It just wasn't electrocution. It was like, what was the, you had the option to be cremated or something.
I do like the fact too that the president, because he's so morally, you know, amazing, that he decides to move the capital of the United States from Washington, D.C. to his hometown of Lynchburg, Virginia.
Yep. Which is so what, 30 minutes away? I mean, how far away is that?
Listen, I don't like to make commute into 495 to go to the White House. So, you know, I'm here at my house. It's a nice little ranch. I don't have to go upstairs. I'm going to do it here in Lynchburg. Meanwhile, he just seems to want to hang out in Los Angeles, or is it his hologram the entire time? Jesus.
Yeah, spend a lot of time there.
Oh, yeah.
The thing I like, the setting of 2013 is when they see Snake and they say, that's Snake Plissken. He looks so retro, so 20th century. It was 13 years ago.
13 years.
So that's 20th Snake. Century.
Yeah.
But actually, now that you guys say this feels like a later movie, it's because it was supposed to have been set in the future at the time. But yeah, so he wears, in the beginning of the movie, he's wearing his original Snake Plissken outfit, and that's what they're
wearing.
But then he does get a new, like, all-black fire-retardant outfit with a long trench coat.
Completely badass.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Super cool outfit, but Kurt was still able to fit into his same outfit from 15 years ago.
I wish I could say the same.
I know, I was like, I'm not sure, I could do that.
No.
But so we mentioned John Carpenter, obviously he's the director of this, and this is his fifth collaboration with Kurt Russell. I love their little bromance they have. And then the same writers, Deborah Hill, Nick Castle, John Carpenter, but also Kurt is credited for writing this parts of this as well. And I think it's his only, has he written anything else? I wonder. I don't think so.
It's off the top of my head.
The music is familiar because it's also John Carpenter with Shirley Walker. I think it was the same in the original. So Kurt's reprising his role as Snake.
He still don't know to this day what SD stood for.
Yes. Well, I wonder if it was because his name's Bob. It's SD Bob Plissken.
Yeah.
So Snake.
I hope it's not like Stephen Daniel Bob Plissken.
What is it? Is it Bob? Is it Robert?
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, that is interesting. So Kurt is 45 at the time of filming this.
That's crazy to think about that. He's 45 years old there. I'm 42. God dang. He still looks great. And he's in his 60s. I mean, come on.
I mean, he's got a little bit of a belly. But
yeah, I mean, it's natural.
We get a Steve Buscemi in this. So you guys, again, if you haven't seen it, Steve Buscemi.
Eddie Map of the Stars.
Yeah.
I want to know why he's so clean and well-dressed in this.
Yeah.
Because it's like post-apocalyptic, literally prison island, and like everything's on fire.
You know what's weird though? The first movie, you get the vibe that it's a prison island because you have soldiers, you have enforcement. This one just feels, oh, there was an earthquake. People got stranded there. Oh, well.
Yeah.
I don't really see any enforcement or, you know what I mean? You just have random gangs. Children in Hondas.
Well, it was the same in the first one. There were no prison guards inside New York in the same way that there wasn't here. There's a wall built around the now island of LA. So I took it to be the same as the first in that you're just left to your own devices and gangs will rise up and some leader will take over.
Do you happen to watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, Katie?
Not regularly.
So the new season, Steve Buscemi was on one of the newest episodes. He has not aged. Like, I had to double take because you see him in this. You're like, wow. Like, it's the Steve Buscemi we have all our head. And granted, everybody ages. But I was like, whoa. Did not age gracefully, unfortunately. Still love Steve Buscemi.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that you didn't think he aged at all. I'm like, oh, he looks the same?
Oh,
you're like, no.
I had to double take. And I was like, oh, my God, that is Steve Buscemi.
He's probably... I don't know, 70, maybe?
He's got to be up there around 70. I mean, Larry David's in his mid-70s now, so.
And then Commander Malloy is played by Stacy Keach.
Yeah.
So
he's our Lee Van Cleef adjacent.
Yes, he is. Now, I loved the girl who played Utopia. So Utopia is the president's daughter. And it's quite ironic that he names his daughter Utopia.
Utopia. Yeah.
But her name, the actress's name is AJ Langer.
She was in a lot of stuff.
My So-Called Life. Please tell me you guys watched.
No, Claire Danes.
Yeah. So AJ played Claire's like badass best friend, Rayanne, in that show.
Yeah, I remember that.
But yeah, she is in a lot. I haven't really seen her in anything lately. Except I think she married into some sort of like royalty.
She's a dame or something like that.
Interesting.
And then the kind of the leader bad guy of the prison, his name in this is Cuervo Jones.
Cuervo Jones.
What a name.
And when you research this actor, he's of Greek and French descent, and he's playing a Latin terrorist.
And he's a Che Guevara.
He's completely a revolutionary.
Yeah. That's who he's supposed to be. Yeah. Played by Georges Coraface.
Yeah. But just like the Duke, I'm not real threatened by this guy.
No.
This guy just is like, hey, I want to get all these people off the island, take back the country.
But I did think, okay. Something that reinforced his power is that the dude regularly has parades.
Yeah.
Where he sits on the back of a vehicle. If somebody wanted to take him out, it would be very easy to do, but it kind of establishes that they're behind this guy. Cause otherwise you'd have every opportunity to eliminate Cuervo if you wanted.
We also need to establish the fact that just like the Duke and his chandeliers on his car, Cuervo has a disco ball on the back of his.
Yes, I love it. There's a yin to every yang in this movie. Yes. Or that's not the right metaphor. But there's the same beats. And I kind of liked, maybe it was even a Cadillac, but it was a convertible and it had a disco ball. But with doll
pop
heads.
Me. Doll oh, yeah. Heads. There's a lot of symbolism in this movie. I mean, we get a group of people called the Surgical Failures.
Yeah, with Bruce Campbell.
With Bruce Campbell, yeah, but yeah.
The
odd.
Well, that, it was. Because there was, in the original, there was like the people who like eat other people, the crazies or whatever they call them.
Yeah, the crazies.
In this, it's now... Beverly Hills is like the bad part of town, which is ironic, right? And it's all these people. I felt like it was a commentary on Beverly Hills plastic surgery because it was everybody had been, their faces are all ruined by bad plastic surgery.
Have constant plastic surgery.
And so they kidnap people to use their spare body parts. I thought it was kind of funny. But yeah, it can't be, indeed. But yeah, that Georges, I feel like that's a French name that I'm mispronouncing. Apologies. He is, I think, to your point, like Spanish or French. So he's a notable box office draw in Greece, Spain, and France, where he lives and is a popular celebrity there. But I don't think he's really known for anything
John Carpenter found a deep cut. He's like, how can I get into this Greek market? Let's get this dude. Is he going to be Greek? Oh, contraire, mon frère. He's going to be Che Guevara. Yeah.
And that is who he plays, for sure.
Yeah.
They never say her name, but Brazen is the commander's right-hand woman. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I don't know if Michelle Forbes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Someone you recognize from a bunch of stuff.
Star Trek. I know her from Star Trek. Yeah. She was Ensign Ro Laren. That's how I remember Michelle Forbes.
She's in a ton of stuff, mostly TV, but long running. She plays characters that last a long time.
Yeah.
I think she got her start in Guiding Light. I never watched that, but she played Sunny in Guiding Light. She was in the show The Killing, also True Blood, Homicide, Life on the Street, and 24.
Oh,
she's in one 24. Of the Hunger Games movies.
She is, yes. Michelle Forbes. She
plays like a similar character.
And then we have Pam Grier playing a transgendered woman. Yeah.
Ahead of its time.
Very ahead of its time. Yeah. Hershey is her name, a.k.a. So you know how in the first movie, Snake meets, what was the guy? Oh, I'm forgetting his name. Who? You
Brain?
Can tell yes. Brain.
It was Brain and Maggie.
Yeah. Yes. Who he had. And the name of the actor, I can picture him, but it's
Harry Dean Stanton.
Yes. Thank you. So that was the character that they knew in a past life, and Harry Dean Stanton screwed him over. Well, that's who Pam Grier plays.
The counterpart in this movie.
Yep. Jack Carjack Malone.
Carjack Malone.
Homeless. Carjack Malone.
Carjack Malone. But Hershey. Great. Yeah. Yeah. Hershey. Oh, yeah. That plus Map to the Stars, Eddie.
And I then, love that. Just
so stars. Hershey has her own little gang. It's like little Tokyo. But no, that wouldn't make sense because her main guy is called Saigon Shadow. So, yeah.
Guy from everything.
That guy was in. Well, two of them were in Big Trouble in Little China because they were a part. One was a part of the Chang Sings, and the other one was a part of the Wing Kong Lo Pan's army. Mm-hmm. But most of those guys you will see
in every especially John 80, Carpenter.
Oh, especially John Carpenter movies. That guy, I think the one was in Django and Cash too. Yeah. So it's
The actor's name is Jeff Imada. He's actually like most known because he's actually a martial artist. So he's known mostly for he's like a stunt coordinator and a tech advisor. And yeah, he was a technical advisor for Tango and Cash, or one of them anyway. Mm-hmm. Cliff Robertson plays the president, and he's really like his face is familiar, and he actually won an Oscar for Charlie from 1968?
I think so.
Charly.
He's been in like a lot of those roles where he's like a secondary character.
Yeah.
I can remember him from certain things, but I appreciate the fact this time we just have him known as the president, unlike Donald Pleasance in the first one where his name was John Harker, but you never knew it because they never said his name. This guy was just president. That's
president.
It.
President. And actually, to your point about Donald Pleasance, he died during filming. He was originally slated to star in this, but he died in 1995 during filming. So that's when they brought in Cliff Robertson to take over the role.
Makes sense then.
Mm-hmm. And Kurt said that he based him on, because he's like a theocrat, based him on, who's that televangelist that died not that long ago?
Billy Graham?
No, Pat Robertson, I want to say.
Pat Robertson. Yep. Yeah, you're right.
That's who his character is kind of based on.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
There are some things in this movie watching it now that I'm like, oh, that's very prescient for what's going on now.
Yeah.
Trying to make America a theocracy and such. We get Peter Fonda as like a surfer dude.
They found him somewhere.
The weird thing is I looked at the cast on Wikipedia and it says Brecken Meyer as surfer. So I was watching out for Brecken Meyer because I had the notes open while I'm looking and I'm like, that's definitely not Brecken Meyer. No. That's Peter Fonda.
There's another surfer. Remember that one really quick scene when Snake first arrives in his submarine that also gets damaged or he can't use that to get back. So I guess he has to find another way back to civilization. There's a quick scene where there's a bunch of surfers.
Okay.
So
and he's Brecken, in there.
Yeah.
That's the counterpart to the first movie when he uses the hand glider.
That's right.
Kind of same technology.
And then it hand falls glider. Off.
Yep. This yep, time it's a submarine. Also falls off.
All right. Shout out to the 1996 computer generated graphics.
Let's not shout those out.
Wow.
I found it. I almost thought they did it on purpose because I was.
Yeah.
It was bad, but on purpose bad? Or was it supposed to be good?
They saved some money.
Yeah.
They mm-hmm. saved some
this
money.
This is an era of film that we're always going to be able to look back at. Like, now we get like 4K remaster of Wizard of Oz. But if you like, I don't think we're going to get a 4K remaster of Escape from LA. Like,
look at the CG in this. Look at Russell Crowe and virtuosity. Yeah. It's just level.
Lawnmower Man.
Yeah.
Just the quality of this.
And but at the time, we're like, oh my God, this looks weird.
I always love when you can easily point out someone's in front of a green screen because of the trimming and stuff.
Yeah, you get the trimming and the outline.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Well, he surfs, doesn't know how to surf, but Peter Fonda's like, well, this is how you're going to get out. And you just do this. And he's like, got it. No problem. And he does. And he surfs his way up to where the highway is.
Eddie Mappinister does not even seem to notice this giant wave next to him.
No, he sees him and he's always.
Eventually and then, he sees him. And then.
He ends up somehow jumping from the wave into the convertible car that Eddie is driving.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's Peter Fonda. Now, speaking of surfers, another one. Have you guys heard of Bo Jesse Christopher? Which is an awesome name that I brought up in my Point Break episode because he was in that.
Great name.
No, that's a great name.
No, I don't remember.
He was also one of the surfers because he in real life was a surfer, thus being in Point Break. So
they needed Kelly Slater in this movie. That's what they really
needed. They should have had the Point Break surf team.
Like, yeah, why not?
Red Hot Chili Peppers, dude. Yeah.
Anthony Kiedis.
So then another person that he meets along the way, her name, and the reason that she's there is because she's Muslim. That's her moral
My favorite character in the movie.
Teslima.
Yeah.
Oh, Valerie Galeno?
Only in the movie for a few minutes.
Yeah, it's very she dies brief, right away.
But we get like the most poignant commentary
from her
where she says basically like LA is not the prison. The rest of the United States is the prison.
You know what's amazing about her? She had her moment in time, like 94, 95, 96. She was on like Hot Shots Part 2.
Yeah.
She seemed to be on the way to being that Kelly LeBrock of the 1990s.
Yeah. I mean, I can compare her to Salma Hayek.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
You know, and a few others that.
But it's like she was there and then she was just gone.
Yeah. She was in Rain Man also.
Yeah.
But yeah. Valerie Galina. I didn't really recognize her, but yeah, she gets shot right after she says the poignant bit.
It's insane. Yeah. It's insane.
Like, yeah.
He meets her in the bushes.
She gets killed by the Honda gang.
Yeah.
What a way to go.
Yeah.
Come on.
Did you guys notice that Jamie Lee Curtis also narrated this one? So she narrated.
I was wondering if that was her again, too.
Didn't think about it. That makes sense.
Jamie Lee Curtis, we get back. And there was one other bit role that I had to look up because I was like, oh my God, is that him? Do you guys know who the skinhead is?
Louis Skolnick.
Robert Carradine.
Yes.
Revenge of the Nerds.
I knew it as soon as I saw him. I don't remember it from, I saw this movie a bunch growing up on cable, but I don't ever remember recognizing Robert Carradine. But as soon as I saw him in this, I'm like, hey, that's Robert Carradine.
Very disconcerting knowing that Louis Skolnick is a skinhead.
It's kind of sad. To see him just do a part for 5 seconds.
You have to remember, too, at this time, he was still, because I can remember seeing Revenge of the Nerds 4 was released on Fox, Nerds and Love.
Yes.
God,
what year was that? What year was that?
I want to say it was right around this time, like 94, 95. It came on Fox. I was like at 8 o'clock night. I was like, oh my God, New Revenge. The third one was bad. It was the new generation.
But 4 is on par with the Saved by the Bell movies.
Oh. The first two were really good, though.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Slam dunks.
Amazing.
Slam dunks.
You don't really recognize him. He doesn't have the glasses. He's got his head shaved. But I was like, oh my God, that's the guy. And I looked it up, and maybe I'm the last person on earth to know this, but I didn't know that he's Keith Carradine's brother.
Yep.
And that David Carradine is their half brother. I didn't know that.
It's so crazy. Of all people, Louis Skolnick. He'll always be Louis Skolnick to me.
Yeah.
No matter what. Never calling him his real name. It's not. He's Louis.
Yep. He is always Louis. All right, you guys.
Circle back to Anthony Edwards.
Mm-hmm. We find our way back to Goose, always.
Did you think that Kurt's voice was different in this? Or did I make that up? Like more deep,
it was
dramatic,
less
raspy?
It was less, you know,
I feel like maybe he talked a little bit more.
He talked louder
than he did in the first one.
Call me. He didn't really do any of that.
Sound like Statham.
Yeah, call me Snake. That,
ooh,
if there was Statham, Snake Plissken, I'd be fine with it.
I would be fine with that.
But we also said we would never want Escape from New York remade unless it's Kurt Russell's son.
Wyatt. Yeah,
yeah, unless it's Wyatt, we don't want to ever see a remake.
Speaking of which, what happened to New York?
Yeah, they don't really...
He escaped.
Yeah, that's
no,
it.
No, I mean like now L.A. is the prison.
Right.
You know what I mean? What happened to New York?
We theorized on this a little bit because I think there's a lot of these prisons, but L.A. seems to be like the
West Coast hub.
Yeah, because we hear so much about Cleveland in this movie.
Yeah,
like
we
every
do. We
other every other scene is like, how did you get out of Cleveland?
Yeah.
So there seems to be regional prisons all over the country.
Yeah.
Okay.
But LA, I think, is the main one.
God, I wish this didn't bomb and they didn't do Escape from Earth. Have them return, call it Return to Cleveland.
Yeah,
like, I need to know what happened in Cleveland.
Agreed. I agree. Yeah, I was like, am I missing something? What's with the Cleveland references?
Yep.
And they don't even really, I'm calling it a prison incorrectly. It's that you are deported LA. So I don't know.
You're morally depraved.
Yeah. By smoking.
Yeah.
And being
my God. We caught Shannon in the corner there ripping a dart or Marlboro, the porter ass. Yeah.
I like that Disneyland's still there, although Cuervo calls it Happy Kingdom.
Yeah. Get those copyright.
Couldn't. Yeah, you're right. That's why the Happy Kingdom.
Happy Kingdom.
So. Do you have different thoughts? Because this was my first viewing. So you guys, I assume, watched it pretty recently. Do you feel...
Yeah.
How do you feel about it now versus historic rememberings of it?
I will always say, I appreciate the fact, Katie, that you saw both these movies fresh.
Yeah.
So it's both a great fresh perspective, which is great.
I saw this a number of times growing up and always kind of enjoyed it. But the scene that stood out was always basketball.
Basketball and surf.
And surfing.
It's the X Games.
Mm-hmm. And, but I will say I always remember, okay, this movie was not great, but I always liked watching it for its campiness. And now I will say it's not as bad as I remember.
I agree. It was, because this is the first time I've seen it in probably 15 years. And we even joked back and forth. Listen, the second one is awful.
Yeah, you guys warned me.
Oh, but you know what? I watched it again this past weekend with my girlfriend because she loves Kurt Russell too and she's never seen it. So the whole time I'm like, yep, this is the pinnacle of mid-90s. Let's throw in extreme sports. How can we show like our CG? Let's show off some computer graphics. Let's see how far we've come with that. But this movie surprisingly held up a lot better than what I initially gave it credit for.
So some of my concerns with this one is I don't want to think that John Carpenter did it as like a cash grab, which because if he did, it obviously didn't work.
Yeah.
But two, it is a little weird to do the almost beat for beat, have the same, have counterparts for everything in this movie versus what was in New York, because it's not really a brand new story.
But Carpenter has even said he loves this way more than he loved Escape from New York. And it kind of blows my mind. Like
I do
people
too.
Escape from New York was such, it's like a lot of people will say, and don't get me wrong, Terminator 2 is probably one of the greatest action movies of all time. But something about that original Terminator, it seemed gritty and real. The original Escape from New York was gritty and it seemed real.
Yeah, and then Terminator 2's catchphrases and...
Yeah, it was more camp.
Ad placement.
Like this, like Escape from L.A.
It tends to happen, I feel like, with sequels generally. Like the Rockies, you know, Rocky 3 and Rocky 4 are vastly different than the original. And your point about Terminator, I feel like, it kind of has to be or something. I don't know.
And then Terminator... It's slowly coming true with AI. So Skynet is inevitable. Go figure.
What's the story with the holograms?
They're all in on that a 90s hologram tech somewhat.
Well, I dig it because this movie has such a tremendous ending. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we want to get into that yet.
Yeah,
but
how about it?
As Snake gets to L.A., and he knows the deal. He says, we're doing this again. Just tell me what I got to do. And he's not cooperative. So then he actually tries to attack the president. And they're like, what an idiot. He doesn't know we're holograms. So then at the end, they've got a remote which can use the satellites.
First off, there's a world code.
There's a world code.
666.
Yeah. Love that. Three digits only. Yeah. Only. I love how these codes are only three digits.
Yeah.
What looks like a television remote that's got this tiny little disc in it.
With a red dot.
With a red dot.
It's like a mini disc.
That they put in, and you can use satellites orbiting Earth to target any area on
EMPs.
Earth and use EMPs to render them
back to the Stone Age.
Exactly. Back to the Stone Age. So at the end of the movie, you know, first off, you realize Snake is not actually injected with this virus that he's so afraid
of. They gave him the flu.
They gave him the flu, a 24-hour flu.
But that was the deal. They liken that. He thinks he's injected with this virus. Just like last
toxins
time.
And virus.
Yes, but what was the deal? They injected him with something last time too. What was the deal?
Explosives.
Yeah,
they put two little explosive things. Yeah, to blow up his carotid.
Okay.
So,
but that wasn't BS though. They literally had to.
That's true.
It was like inner space.
Yes. Another great movie.
It is a great movie.
Yeah, it's a great one.
So at the end of the movie, you know, he sees through all their BS about the, you know, they're just using him. He knows that. But he appears as a hologram.
Yeah.
And he enters the world code and turns the Earth back to Stone Age. It's so good.
The world.
But I just love.
They shoot at him. And the reason we find out that he's a hologram is because he does that despite the president. So they're once again, the president gets the thing back. And then he's embarrassed on a live broadcast that he got faked out.
You got Eddie State.
Yeah. His tour of the stars tape. And so on air, the president says, shoot him. And they do. But because he's a hologram, he doesn't die, obviously.
Yeah. And in Last Jedi, Rian Johnson steals this with Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
They do the same thing.
Oh, really?
Luke appears as a hologram. They attack him full out. And when the smoke clears, he's still standing there. They try again. It's exactly the same.
Yep. Katie, you got to jump into the Star Wars.
No, don't.
I know. I feel like I won't like it. And then people who love it are going to be annoyed by me not liking it.
See, that's the weird thing, like Star Wars and stuff like that. Not so much with Star Trek, but it's tribalism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, you don't like Star Wars, but you like you. It's come on. People can like and hate what, you know, whatever, you know, it's opinions.
Yeah. I just recently did a bonus episode on the new Roadhouse remake.
Yeah.
So I was very much in that frame of mind. And so there were a few times that I giggled at, I thought you'd be taller in this.
Yeah.
Which was that just a nod to Roadhouse? That had nothing to do with anything, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it was a nod to Roadhouse as much as it was like an SNL Bill Brasky, where I feel like Snake Plissken has a built-in like set of, you know, urban myths or legends surrounding him. I heard Snake Plissken was 10 feet tall. Like,
also, what is badass a snake is? How does he always keep getting caught? This is the second time now he's gotten a manhunt and he's been captured. You think after all these places he's escaped from, New York, Cleveland, Kansas City, that he would never get captured again?
Well, maybe that says something about Snake Plissken that
he hasn't
realized for himself. Maybe he wants to be caught.
Oh, introspection.
Because we wouldn't have a sequel if he went to Canada.
Don't know what happened in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And we don't know how Snake Plissken has spent his time between New York, Cleveland, and
Los Angeles. Yeah.
What has he been doing? Maybe he's bored.
Yeah, and he's just like, I got to do something, man.
Like a cause.
I got these benefits that are going to expire. I need to be active in something.
Yeah, they're like, once again, we'll give you a full pardon if you do this little maneuver for us. So one of the scenes that I really liked in the original was the gladiator style fight in the ring.
Oh, yeah.
With that big bald guy.
Well, Slag. This time,
Slag. How do you? Yeah, my memory is the worst. Hey. Well, so now we're at the football stadium that has, we're shown very similar cage style, gladiator style matches where Cuervo acts as the emperor and gives the thumbs up or the thumbs down. And
yeah,
so
it's like world's worst Olympics.
Oh, yeah, it's bad Olympics.
That one guy gets his head chopped off with a giant scissors. Or what was that thing?
And Cuervo literally does the gladiator.
He does the gladiator thumbs down.
He does it and tells him to do it. The guy literally has a giant pair of shears.
Yeah.
But Kurt plays basketball. So they have a basketball game.
Basketball.
And the deal no one has won. All the points are 2 points. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a three. Like, yes. There are 2 points. There's a 10-second shot clock, but it's full court. You can't miss a basket either, or you'll get shot. So he does it, including a half court shot, including a full court shot.
While sick with the flu.
Which Michael Jordan had the flu game.
That's right.
This is the Snake Plissken
97, flu game. Game 5 in Utah.
So this predicted, Michael Jordan probably saw this and was like, you know what? I'm going to pretend to have the flu.
Now I will say, this is an actual drill. I did this drill when I went to basketball camp.
Oh.
Up and down the floor, 10 seconds, score as many points as you can. Now, granted, the coach wasn't aiming a gun at me and threatened to murder me, but it's an actual drill.
I didn't know that. I am so bad under pressure that I would immediately
miss the first shot.
Yeah, I'd miss.
Oh, yeah.
But I was reading that Kurt played, like, apparently it's him making all those shots. Like, I don't know how many takes it took.
I would believe Kurt Russell's a pretty good athlete.
I would say they probably did the full court shot multiple takes. Sure. And then he finally, like the Mr. Perfect WWF vignettes, where he's Mr. Perfect and he hits every single shot. When you see the behind the scenes where he's done like 20 things, like, Jesus, all right, this is the last time I'm doing it. And he finally hits it. Mm-hmm. I think that's what they do with Kurt.
Yeah, I just love in the basketball scene when Cuervo is like, I promised you all something special. You know, I'm going to kill Snake Plissken. Why doesn't he just kill him?
Just do it already, pal.
Why does he give him? I mean, Cuervo's got a heart, I guess, because he allows Snake to at least try, and he does it.
And listen, and near the end.
But then he shoots him anyway.
He tries to shoot him anyway.
And in the end, you have his whole army is surrounding that United States Police Force helicopter. You're telling me at any given time, you couldn't have killed him. Also, big logic issue. At the very beginning of this movie, during Jamie Lee's rundown, they said the United States Police Force was created in 1998. Mm-hmm. If you listen to the first movie, the United States Police Force was created already in the first movie. So, logic.
Ah, good point.
Why? Why screw that up?
I don't know. It was probably, it's one of those things where my nerdy ass mind goes, I got you.
Because when did that one take place? In 97?
The first one took place in 97.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But then doesn't this one start, in 98?
First one starts in 98.
Yeah.
No, this one starts in 98, then the 2013.
Yeah. I quite liked the motorcycle scene.
It's
towards
really
the
good.
Beginning. I thought that was a really good. I mean, yes, it's like he's an invincible person because he loses his guns and then everybody's shooting at him, but he somehow never gets shot.
Yeah.
I think this was the scene where we get the original gruff Snake Plissken.
Yeah.
Where he's, what is it? Not Bangkok Draw or something like, or whatever it's called, where he throws the can up in the air.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
And he's like, nobody touch your gun until it hits the ground. And he pulls the snake thing, mows them all down, and goes, draw. It's awesome. It's so cool.
It is. He's a trickster. What did you guys think of the, I guess, police force chopper?
It's cool. I like the collapsible. I almost said antennas. The collapsible. It's a fly. The collapsible propellers are really cool. It's really, we're in that age of where stealth was the end all be all. They got pretty badass ships. I like them.
Yeah, it's funny because at the shootout in the end, when he's like in the helicopter, it's indestructible, and then. They're not really like completely in it.
No.
And then Eddie falls out of it.
Yeah.
Or jumps out of it, whatever. When Cuervo Cuervo, despite being shot, shoots the rocket launcher at Eddie Map of the Stars, which is a bad name.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe my expectations were so low, but I thought that the futuristic helicopter was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I dug it. It reminded me of Airwolf.
I did not. Do you remember? That.
You remember? It was 80s TV show about a cool. It was basically Knight Rider A-Team combined into a Jan Michael Vincent.
Yeah.
Ernest Borgnine, weirdly enough, was also.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Again, like the beat for beat at the end. So Snake is constantly correcting people. They'll say, Plissken, do this. And he's the name is Snake or it's Snake. Until the end, when he finally says Snake correctly, the commander, and Snake says, the name's Plissken. And he tries to walk away just like he did in the first one with a cigarette, but you can't smoke there. But then I loved the end, the final end where he's awesome. Like, he finds a cigarette and he still has matches from the kit that he had.
Yeah.
And he gets to smoke. And what was the final line that he says?
The picture fades to black, and it's something about darkness or something like
welcome
that.
Welcome to the human race.
Welcome to the human welcome race. That's it.
Yeah. That such was pretty great.
And then we escape from Earth.
I went for this. I want all technology to be shut down, and I want to revert back to Stone Age.
Yeah.
So I'm like cheering this ending. Yes, that's awesome.
Give me Snake Plissken killing a T-Rex. Let's get crazy. Come
killing
on, damn
a
it.
T-Rex.
Just Let's like, do it.
Yeah, he's on a different planet now.
Snake Plissken at Jurassic Park.
So, Snake, and to your point a little bit earlier, Jim, Snake, the way he always gets captured.
Yeah.
He also, while in L.A., he gets duped by Eddie.
Yep.
Which ends up at Cuervo. This is super weird to me because he's this a type of person, but Cuervo puts Snake on a treadmill. He changed him to a treadmill.
Oh, that's right.
And then Cuervo goes live to the whole universe.
And
apparently.
That's how they know Snake is still alive.
And Cuervo's delivering this speech to everyone. If I were watching that broadcast, I'd say, why is there a guy in the background on a treadmill?
Why is there a guy with an eye patch on a treadmill? Just running? Is he doing Peloton? Yeah. What's happening?
Everybody
right
else
now?
Is standing around tough with guns. Yeah. And you got Cuervo there, which everybody knows. And you got Utopia.
Yeah.
But then guy on a treadmill.
Just so random.
Why does the president, is it supposed to be like a commentary on that type of person, like the Pat Robertson type, that he's really not such a good guy after all? Because he orders his own daughter to be killed.
Yeah, literally take her to the chair.
We got to talk about Utopia and how she ended up in this situation anyway. She was secretly addicted or doing VR.
Yeah, she was addicted to virtual reality.
And somehow...
That's morally wrong.
Cuervo infiltrated
VR.
The VR?
It's the lawnmower man.
Was that through a hack?
Yeah, it might have been.
So somehow, Cuervo is like next level mastermind.
Yeah, but we covered this movie. You know exactly what movie.
Well, Strange Days?
No, not Strange Days. VR. Or no, the TV. Edward Furlong.
Oh, Brain Scan.
Brain Scan.
Brain Scan is a great movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so somehow Cuervo manages to infiltrate the virtual reality, and it's like him in like a field of flowers.
It's so weird.
And
just that one shot.
So the president's daughter, Utopia, falls in love with a virtual version of Cuervo, and then I'm assuming just like catches a ride to L.A., or does she commit a moral crime to be sent
there? Well, would her dad consider this pornography then?
Well, and then she must have been on like an Air Force One type plane because they talk about her escape
Air Force
pod.
Three.
Yeah, she was on Air Force Three.
Okay.
Yeah.
She landed in the prisonscape because in the same way of the first movie, it was an escape pod.
Yeah.
That's how she lands there with that black box that she took.
Yeah.
It has the
also reminiscent
thing.
Counterpart of the first movie.
Yeah.
The escape pod.
The National Liberation Front for America.
Mm-hmm.
Which I wonder, in a way, they don't mention it in this movie, but it almost seems like Cuervo is like the West Coast leader of the National Liberation Front of America. But he has more of a global alliance. Like, The Cubans are going to invade Miami.
Yeah.
You have people coming up from Mexico. He is well organized.
Yeah.
Very well organized. Probably through VR.
Maybe.
Yeah.
See, that's a way more interesting movie.
Yeah.
If you've got this revolutionary leader who's infiltrate, like sending messages
through your VR,
through VR that the, you know, the US doesn't know about.
It's pretty awesome.
I don't know. I felt like there was a few items, that being one of them. They introduced a few too many complex things just real quickly, just barely touched on it. And it's, wait, what happened now?
Very much Band-Aids.
Yeah.
From here to here. But yeah, we're not going to explain it to you.
I have not seen this movie, but John Carpenter's Ghosts of Mars from 2001. Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen that movie or heard of it even?
Long time ago.
I've seen it a long time ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I've never even heard of it, but apparently it was originally intended to be the third Snake Plissken film titled Escape from Mars.
Oh, going from Mars.
But then I also read Earth, so they were contemplating a few. Anyway, it didn't do well enough, and so the character Desolation Williams took the place of Plissken as the lead in that movie, if this sounds familiar to anyone.
Great name. Yep. I saw that when it first came out.
Ice Cube.
Yeah, I think you're right about
that.
Oh,
really?
Mm-hmm.
I sort of thought that Hershey would be in this way more than she was.
Yeah, she literally it was almost a little bit more than a cameo at the rate they used her. Pam Grier is amazing, man.
Pam Grier is incredible. Mm-hmm. I mean, between, you know, her work in the 70s and then as Jackie Brown. Jackie Brown's such a fantastic movie. I always love the story of Tarantino catching up with Pam Grier and saying, hey, I have a script for you. And she's, oh, yeah. And then he's, no, I wrote it for you. It's your movie.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, it's a great story.
Okay, cool.
I didn't tell it so eloquently, but yeah, he wrote Jackie Brown for Pam Grier. And she, at this time, she was getting Carjack Hershey type roles.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, her voice was extremely low in the movie. That's obviously not her natural voice. They had to lower it electronically.
Yeah,
quite obviously, too.
Yeah, and like we said, Snake's real name is Bob.
I wish he would go, hey, Snake, call me Bob.
Call me Bob.
Bob.
Instead of Plissken.
Yeah,
Bob, Snake.
So there is a Wyatt Russell, little clip of him in this.
Ooh. Really?
So I think it's when there's like a group of kids in the waiting area before you go to LA where you can choose to be electrocuted instead. There's like a group of kids.
At the deportation area.
Yeah. He's one of the kids there and he's wearing a cap and Snake makes eye contact with him. That's Wyatt Russell.
That's how you could tie it in.
See, to me, that's a little bit of a tea and cake or death situation.
Yeah, Eddie Izzard.
Cake, please. Because... okay, you can go into LA and live here, and it might be rough, but you take your chances. Or you can be electrocuted first.
Yeah, right here, right now.
I mean, how many of the people, unless in the United States, they've hyped LA up so much to be such a bad place.
Yeah.
Who would prefer to be like, yes, just electrocute me?
I'm going to LA.
I would.
Who would choose electrocute?
I said in the first one, I can't remember what the method of death was in the first one. But instead,
was it firing squad?
No, it was just like,
I don't remember.
I can't remember what it was, like evaporation or something.
Yeah.
Because I would rather, I don't want to live in like a Lord of the Flies type situation.
Okay.
I do.
I'd be bad in an apocalyptic situation.
Yeah, just it's guaranteed death or.
But you would have to deal with aftershocks like. Absolute crazy. We get that throughout the whole movie. There's massive aftershocks. Mm-hmm.
Guaranteed death or let's see what happens.
We'll see. Anything's possible in this movie because we talked about the helicopters earlier. The helicopters have this amazing thing to be hit by a rocket propelled grenade and only kill the people in the back of the helicopter. They just incinerate. But as long as you're driving it or in the passenger seat, you're fine. So LA is worth a shot.
Yeah. Because what's the worst? Worst that's going to happen.
You get killed by the Honda gang.
Death. Yeah. I mean,
but you could be tortured first.
As long as
they don't
get touched by the surgical people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As long as they're in Beverly Hills.
Yeah. I'll stay the hell away
from
Beverly Hills.
I don't want any spare parts.
But they even tell you, stay away from Beverly Hills.
Don't go
there.
That is true. But if I'm new, I don't know that.
It's true. Yeah. You need to find Eddie. Map of the Stars.
Yeah, you do. The only casting what if that I found was for Utopia. Kate Hudson apparently auditioned.
Ooh, okay. That'd be cool. You got the, because that's Kurt and Goldie's daughter, right?
I'm kind of surprised it wasn't Goldie's daughter.
Goldie's daughter. Dominic Swain.
That's who I would have thought because, you know, she's in Face Off as the daughter, but she was in everything at this time. I don't know. I didn't remember it from the first time I watched this, but when you have the scene between Utopia and Bob Snake, and Utopia and Utopia is pleading with Bob.
Yeah.
I'm just going to call him Bob from here on out. She's pleading with him like, Cuervo's crazy.
Yeah.
I would prefer my dad to Cuervo. And I thought she was going to double cross him.
See, I thought that was going to happen too. Because it was set
it's
up
actually
like that.
Eddie Map of the Stars who pulls out, it's a knife?
Eddie did like a face, baby face.
Yeah.
He went baby to heel, baby to heel all the time.
But Eddie, does he shoot him or stab Bob?
He shoots Bob in the leg.
Yeah. And then he falls into the sewer. And I'm like, did he keep the briefcase? Did he drop whatever? But, and that's where he goes on to surf, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought Utopia was going to double cross him and realize, no, she's of her own free will staying with Cuervo. But no, that's not the case.
Well, she gets left because she knows that her dad wants her dead. He says, oh, just, we're going to drop you off in these trees real quick and you just disappear. Like, she doesn't come back to the Disneyland area.
I don't know. Let me pick L.A. or Lynchburg, Virginia. I'll go L.A. Screw it.
I don't know, man. I think I don't want the America that they've developed either in this movie. Yeah, so I don't know.
It's nearly prosthetic, though, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yes, because there's even a line where is it the commander or somebody says, go watch him, make sure he doesn't do something stupid. So essentially, there's a president that cannot be trusted to not be an idiot. And so there have to be handlers. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
I think that
sounds familiar.
Escape from LA actually would make a pretty solid, like 8-part or 10-part series.
Yeah.
Because if you saw more of what was happening, because we see nothing of what's happening in the U.S.
We need backstory.
Because obviously the president and all his men, they're not upholding the moral standards.
They're breaking the moral standards.
They are. They're doing whatever they want. They're drinking and smoking and fornicating. They're doing whatever they
want.
They're
murdering
people. They're murdering people.
Using morality as a justification.
Exactly. So it'd be fascinating to see that at length, actually how bad, you know, the U.S. is, and then also go into a little bit of about like maybe the backstory of Cuervo or whatever.
Here's an idea.
You're That would be good.
Imagine doing like even a 10-episode series, HBO produced, of the background of Snake, or even if you want to do Escape from his whole backstory.
I mean, you like could
the leftovers.
You could do Escape from as a series,
yes.
with each season being him moving on to
Cleveland,
Miami,
New York,
Utah.
I love it.
Starring Wyatt Russell as SD Bob Pliskin.
And it's not wildly outside of some other shows that are comparable, but like Last of Us or Walking Dead or something. But
Handmaid's Tale, even.
Yeah, Handmaid's Tale. But just to see, you know, this post-apocalyptic event and, you know, who are the other, because there's more Snake Plissken's out there.
Oh, there's tons.
You know what I mean? Yeah. There's more of these guys.
Freedom fighters.
Why does it have to be Snake?
Well, because they point out again how special he is, because he was the youngest to get some honor from the president, 2 Purple Hearts. He's something special about Snake.
Gold Star, whatever that was, over Leningrad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys have any, before we close, final thoughts wrapping up Escape from L.A.?
I'm very much on board for more.
Yeah,
I would be. Even if they did a old Snake.
Yeah.
What if Snake has to go back one more time?
Well, here's the funny thing. Like, Metal Gear, the video game, used the name Snake Plissken. The whole premise of the character Snake Plissken was used in the Metal Gear series.
Yeah.
Now, throughout the series, you get Snake aging. And when it comes to the fourth one, Snake has been infected with a thing. Well, I can really jump into lore, but a thing called Fox Dye, which makes Snake age rapidly. You can have an old gray Snake. Yeah. It's same character, same Snake Plissken, eye patch.
And
yes,
you know what he
can
say?
What?
Call me Bob.
Call me Bob.
He's just Grandpa Bob now.
Papa Bob.
Yeah, I'm for it, and I don't want to go too much down the Logan path with old Wolverine.
Yeah.
But I would be for, Snake, there's no one else. It's got to be you. We need you to beat this mission. Where would it be? I don't know.
And then you could wrap up the lore and then come back around and Snake kill him off at the very end, or he can go out peacefully on his own way.
And in a counterpart way to L.A. and New York, you could very much do they talk about, how the Earth even
works anymore,
how they fixed it. After Snake, you keep getting the reference that Snake did the world code and shut it down. So what happened?
There was this enclave in Southeast Asia that wasn't affected by the world code.
Yes. You guys get writing. I'm telling you.
Kevin and Jim
have this Netflix series or HBO series or whatever. I'm down for it too.
We'd be fine with Tubi. cheaper amount, that's fine.
I'll watch it on Tubi. So listeners, this is my first time watching these. I am not a sci-fi fan, but I will say that I'm very pleasantly surprised by Escape from New York and Escape from LA. I like it better.
Yeah. You know what, I give it a lot of credit. I will always have a special place in my heart for Escape from New York. I love it more than L.A., but L.A. is way better than I ever gave it credit for. It's more fun. It's campy. It's dumb fun. It's dumb fun.
Retromade listeners, pool scene listeners, this is our second crossover.
Crossover, baby.
Remind Retromade listeners where they can listen to and find Pool Scene Podcast.
Well, we are everywhere. Apple, Spotify, Podbean, Podbay, wherever podcasts are found. We are coming up on episode number 200. Still got to figure out what we're going to do for 200 festival. So check us out there. We have our Facebook page. We also have an exclusive group on our Facebook page called the Pool Sceners Group.
It's
free. Yeah, you are in it. You know it. You get some sneak peeks and exclusive previews. And then we're also on Instagram. We have a TikTok. TikTok is kind of more of a kind of curated for classic commercials and stuff like that. More of a nostalgia type TikTok.
New episodes Mondays.
Yep. New episodes on Mondays. We have our Eclipse special will be out on Monday, April the 8th. As we are near Cleveland, we are in full and total totality. Oh. So all you pool sceners out there listening here on Retromade, you are going to be privy to the longest episode ever in Pool Scene Podcast history, nearly 3 hours.
Wow.
I am not looking forward to finishing editing it because it's a mess, but it is so much fun. The movie is Heavyweights, Ben Stiller, 1995. We have our old friends coming. They came into town right after Christmas, so we are hitting some of the back catalog. We have Heavyweights, and then after that, we have Flight of the Navigator, a great weird Disney movie from 1986.
Flight of the Navigator.
Yeah.
Wow, so we have that. Some fun stuff coming up.
Yeah. We're excited to hit number 200 and celebrate our 4-year anniversary.
Well, congratulations, you guys.
Thank you. Thank you, Katie.
And I want to thank you all for listening to Retromade or watching it on YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed. I would love a review, please. But until next time, be kind. Rewind.